Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program, and editor-in-chief of Chicken Whisperer magazine. Each week, I welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to join us Monday through Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Blog Talk Radio. And we will return with more Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply, right after this beginning short break.
Are you in the market for a new chicken coop? Want one that will outlast all the others? Then check out Urban Coop Company. All of their coops are made from 100% appearance-grade Western Red Cedar with galvanized hardware and advanced all-weather joinery right here in the USA. Compared to other coops, Urban Coop Company coops will last longer and look better doing it. They're designed to be both beautiful and functional. In fact, they have earned the Chicken Whisperer Seal of Approval and are Chicken Whisperer approved. I invite you to browse their website to learn more about the many features of their coops and check out their integrated coop accessories that will make your life easier. Urban Coop Company is a family-owned business located in Dripping Springs, Texas, USA. They are passionate about building great coops because they know you're passionate about your backyard chickens. Visit them online at urbancoopcompany.com. That's urbancoopcompany.com. Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com. Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting, and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at sweeterheater.com. That's sweeterheater.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We have a great show lined up for you today. It is Monday, which means we are very fortunate and honored to have the chicken doctor, Peter Brown, here, founder of First State Vet Supply. We're talking about LT today. There appears to be somewhat of an outbreak, if you would, up in the Pacific Northwest. And so it is a very timely topic, and we'll be discussing that here in just a few minutes as the chicken chat room slowly but surely fills up. I want to send a shout-out to everybody in the chicken chat room, everybody else that's listening live that can't access the chicken chat room for whatever reason. Maybe your workplace doesn't allow it. All the over-the-road truck drivers, we are on the road again. Yes, we are, and I passed many of y'all. Y'all passed, many have passed me today on our first stop, but we're on the road again, so over-the-road truck drivers, we occasionally hear from them. They pick up the show on iTunes, .com, podcast.com, zoom.com, or other different websites that carry our show, and maybe soon even iHeartRadio and Pandora. So that's some information that we're working on to get the show out there even more. But and, of course, all the homeschoolers, school is back in sessions. Thank you for implementing the show into your daily curriculum. And thank you, all the feed and seed stores around the country that have streamed this radio show live every day to your customers. We thank you for doing so. Yes, the 2014 Fall Chicken Whisperer Tour, sponsored by Tractor Supply Company, is underway. We left the homestead this morning at 10 a.m., and we did a little farewell picture in front of our neighbor's house. We pulled up. They were outside. We said, hey, farewell picture. So we did that and then hit the road and arrived safely to our first destination. It was about a 2.5-hour drive here in the Atlanta metro area. We're actually at Stone Mountain Park. We really enjoy this place. We're here quite a bit throughout the year, either coming and going to somewhere or coming home from somewhere. We always try to make a stop here at Stone Mountain Park. It's a really nice place. They got a beautiful campground and lots of stuff to do for the kiddos. So we are here for that. Tomorrow, the reason why I'm here is we have that national webinar with the CDC and the USDA at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. So there will be no podcast tomorrow because we'll be broadcasting live. Hopefully instead of the podcast, you'll tune in to the national webinar. And we'll be talking a little bit about parasites and worming and lighting and preparing for winter. And again, with the CDC and USDA, keeping you and your flock safe from diseases and how to do that. So that'll be tomorrow at 2 p.m. After the show today, I will be posting that link, how you can register for free for that webinar. And space is limited, and I'm not sure if it ends today or if you can actually register in the morning up to the time we start that webinar at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. But I will be posting it on my Facebook page. If you don't want to wait, you can go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/TheChickenWhisperer, and scroll down and find that link, where you can register for the webinar tomorrow. Absolutely free educational webinar, so gotta love it. I'm trying to think of anything else that's in the news recently other than being on the road. We've got stops from Virginia all the way up to Maine. So I know the schedule is posted on our Facebook. On the way here, my lovely wife Jen was actually working on a file, PDF. I think it'll probably end up being like a JPEG. We'll put it in a JPEG format so we can post it on Facebook, and it'll be on our website too, chickenwhisperer.com. All the stops, all the times, all the locations, which will be, of course, Tractor Supply stores along the tour, and each event's about 2 hours long. It's about an hour and a half getting started with Backyard Poultry Workshop, and then a book signing, pictures, autographs, fun things like that. I have plenty of magazines to go around and plenty of prizes at each stop to give away as well. So I'm looking forward to it, to know all of it will be wrapped up probably in about 6 weeks. So looking forward to a safe tour. We ask that you please keep me and my family in your prayers for safe travels, and that we don't run into any hiccups along the way, both mechanical, physical, and I guess the whole nine yards. So we appreciate that, whether it be prayers or good vibes or uplifting thoughts or whatever you do, we would appreciate it. Absolutely, we would. So, and thank you very much for tuning in today. All right, I'm going to go over here to the phone lines. We've got Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Supply, joining us. Let's give him a big Chicken Whisperer welcome, why don't we? Hey, Peter, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Andy, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. I posted, I think, yesterday that we were all excited for one reason or the other to head north, and I think one of my reasons was for cooler temperatures. Cooler temperatures and no gnats. Of course, many people know our homestead is below the gnat line, if you know anything about that. And so getting ready, spend a lot of time outside, getting the RV and the truck and everything else ready. We are below the gnat line. It is mid-August, so it is hot, 96 degrees a couple of days this week. And the gnats that fly in your nose and your mouth and in your ears and all around your head. So I'm glad that now, at least in Atlanta, be above the gnat line, but it's still, and it's not quite as hot, but I'll be ready for, I noticed in Bangor, Maine last night, it was like 56 or 58 degrees, so that's just right for me. I'm looking forward to it. Jen says, ooh, that's cold. I said, no, that's refreshing.
Well,
so,
same thing
she
here.
Called cold. She calls cold, and I call it refreshing, so we're looking forward to it, so.
Well, here it's a nice day today, actually. It's sunny and for the most part, about 80 degrees out, and overnight temp is supposed to be about 68. So
yeah,
it'll be comfortable. You're heading.
That'll be nice open window sleeping right there, yeah.
Yeah, the whole week the temperature is supposed to be middle to lower 80s. So the temperature overnight temps in the middle 60s. So shouldn't be too bad. You know, for the next week up this way.
Yep.
You know, thunderstorms, all that kind of garbage that we get this time of year, it's just the way it is, you know.
Yeah, we're going to be looking at that. We'll be dodging some of those, I'm sure, leaving early or leaving late or, you know, trying to squeak through to the cells that are coming across the highway. We've done that before and, you know, figuring out how fast it's going and where it's going. And I said, well, if we leave now, I think we can split that storm between right through that little window we have. We've done that before. It's so funny. Like, I think if we leave now or leave at 1:30, as soon as that one, we'll be coming right up the highway. As that one goes over, and the other one will be right behind us. So it's
yep.
And this last spring, when we were going through Tornado Alley in Kansas and Oklahoma, and hoo-wee, let me tell you, it was, we did a lot of that. So hopefully this year it won't. Yeah, those little pop-up thunderstorms and whatnot up the East Coast, yeah, we're used to that here, too, so.
Yeah.
Be skirting around, of course, I'm sure. So, but so LT is today's topic, and looking forward to it. You said there's a little bit of going on up in the Pacific Northwest, and so mm-hmm. Gotten lots of calls from it, lots of orders specifically treating for that. So you thought we'd touch on that a little bit today, which is perfectly fine.
Yeah, it's one of those things that most backyard small flock holders, will never see it unless they bring in birds from somebody who is vaccinated with one of the chick embryo or what we call a hot strain of the vaccine, or those folks that go to on the show circuit and have birds that are not vaccinated and then are cooped in or close to or bring home birds from that show that were vaccinated with the chick embryo, which is a hot strain of the laryngotracheitis vaccine. Everybody calls it LT for short, laryngotracheitis, hard for a lot of folks to say. It's easy for me. I've been yapping it for many years, so it's no big deal.
Huh.
But it is a virus. It's very easily spread. The problem that you would have in trying to decide whether or not you have LT or not, we try to look at how this spreads, and then we'll also look at how the bird starts to present itself. So, because one of the other viruses that is going to give you some of the same type of symptoms, not all of them, but some of them, would be infectious bronchitis. infectious bronchitis doesn't seem to be near as big a problem either in the fancy or in the backyard community. And I recommend that people not vaccinate for the infectious bronchitis unless they're actually faced with a problem or live in an area where it is a problem or that kind of thing, or they're in a show group or club where a lot of people vaccinate for it. The problem with the infectious bronchitis viruses is that they have a tendency to recycle themselves through a flock, and they have a tendency to be more of a problem sometimes than the remedy that they're intended to be. The commercial poultry industry is a heavy users of them because they don't have a choice for the most part, but they use them very selectively now and are looking at some of these recombinant vaccines, and they're also looking at vaccination at what we call in ovo, which is done in the egg. They're doing the same thing for LT. They're looking at a lot of them now being done in the egg prior to hatching. So, the jury's still out on all of that stuff as to how well it's worked. I've seen areas where it seems to be working well, others not so much. And it all is going to depend on how well that embryo is going to respond and build antibodies prior to being hatched and exposed in the chicken coops. But that's an interesting subject all in itself. So the LT virus, one of the things you're going to look for with it is that the rate of spread spreads very quickly from bird to bird. This virus settles down or colonizes, if you will, which is just a fancy word for where it lives and where it grows, and that's in the lining of the trachea. The trachea, you want to call it the bird's windpipe. Some people call it the bird's throat. It doesn't matter to me what you call it, as long as you understand where it resides. That's where its home is. That area where it sets up shop in the trachea, obviously it's very warm, very moist. Conditions are perfect for this type of a virus to invade that area, infect that tissue, and set up shop and start reproducing itself and spread all over the place. So what this does is it degrades, if you will, breaks down the tissue or the lining of the trachea and causes it to bleed. Okay, it depends on how the bird was infected, and it depends on how virulent the strain of LT is that the bird was infected with as to whether or not you'll actually see bleeding from the mouth. Sometimes you'll see it in the water when a bird is taking a drink. It'll leave a bloody slime behind. I have not seen in recent modern times, and this probably has to do with the fact that a lot of the commercial birds are vaccinated these days, especially in the egg-laying community. I don't believe I know of anybody in the egg-laying community that doesn't vaccinate for this particular virus. Broilers vaccinate for it on an as-needed basis, and that would be if there's an outbreak somewhere, they'll cordon off that whole area, not move anything in or out. That means no servicemen going farm to farm. Feed trucks have to be all disinfected after each farm that they visit and so on. This virus is very prolific, easy to spread, so that's why they have to take those kinds of precautions. Now, you might say, well, wouldn't they be smarter to go ahead and vaccinate all the birds? On one hand, that seems very practical. On the other hand, it's not practical. It's not cost-effective in a number of ways. You'd have to send crews around to each farm. I believe here where I live, there are at least 2,500-plus chicken houses. So it's a lot of chicken houses to visit. That means a lot of crews. They're not all owned by the same companies and so on. So there's the cost of that. There's the cost of the vaccine. And the other thing that most vaccines do is that they will slow down the growth of the birds, and broiler birds are all about growth and putting on as much weight as they can for the amount of feed that they're eating. So that's generally how it's handled in those particular groups. And because of the way that it's been handled over the years in the commercial sector, it is not as big a problem, at least in this country. It is a problem in other countries, but more so. They continue to work on it and continue to come up with better methods of vaccination. and that kind of thing. So it seems to be working to some degree. Okay. So we don't see the normal blood slinging that we used to see years ago. It was not uncommon 25, 30 years ago or less to go into a chicken house in the morning and just see the blood everywhere on the feeders, the waters, the walls, the litter from birds that were slinging the blood out of their mouth. Now, the reason they're doing this, you have to understand that anything that enters the trachea, there's no musculature, there's no diaphragm that the bird has to get anything out of that trachea. So the only way they have to get it out is to try to shake their head and sling their head side to side, because this degeneration of the lining of the trachea is bleeding at the same time. So looking at the bird holding its head up, the blood's going to run down the trachea itself and then get into the bronchi and the mesobronchi, which are little tubes that lead to the lungs, and plug it up, and it doesn't take very long before the bird starts gasping for air, turns blue, and dies. So that's the reason why we were seeing so much blood at that point in time. So you may not see that. Most people do not. Most of the birds that I have either examined personally or come in contact with via the phone or the Internet, the birds have very much symptoms of infectious bronchitis, conjunctivitis in the eye, which is a swelling of the tissues around the eye itself, weepy eyes, rattling, coughing, choking, sneezing, slinging the head around from side to side. They also have a particular posture that you don't generally see with the infectious bronchitis, and that is the bird has a tendency to sit back on its tail and stretch its neck out in front of it. Okay, not necessarily on the ground, but it will stretch its neck out, trying to breathe, trying to clear that trachea, trying to clear that airway, and having a lot of difficulty doing so. And before I said it depends, the severity of this can depend on how the bird was infected. That would mean whether this was taken in through the nostril, the original virus, whether that virus was taken in through the eye, or whether that virus was taken in through the trachea itself. We tend to have birds show more severe symptoms and possibly some bleeding if the virus was taken in through the trachea itself, because it's right there where it needs to be. It doesn't have to migrate away from some other area and get to the trachea to set up shop. So it's right there, and it does its damage the quickest. Normally, we look at an incubation time of anywhere from 5 to 10 days after exposure. When we look at this type of a incubation time, we're talking about birds that were probably not inoculated through the trachea itself. The incubation time for birds who were sucked this virus in through the trachea itself directly seems to be lesser time, usually running anywhere from 2 to 4, possibly 5 days, and then you'll start to see those symptoms. And one other thing that these birds have a tendency to do because of where this virus is and the breakdown of the tissue in that trachea, you will see birds that make a cawing sound. You'll know it when you hear it, but it's a very distinct cawing sound. So by putting the symptomology together, examining where you've been, new birds that might have been added to the flock, maybe you vaccinated with a chick embryo vaccine and now you're seeing a severe reaction. Maybe you were at your friend's house helping vaccinate for laryngotracheitis and he or she used a chick embryo type vaccine and you brought it home that way. Maybe you were to a show and you brought it home that way. So you need to examine all of these things and then look at the spread from the time you first noticed it till other birds start to get sick. And look at that time frame, the conjunctivitis in the eye, the sneezing, the coughing, the sitting back on the tail, the cawing sound, all of this, possible blood from the trachea, the mouth, in the waters or on the feed or things of that nature, will all lead to make your own definitive diagnosis based on what you see. Certainly, you could take the birds to your local laboratory and have them do a necropsy. The issue that might be experienced there would be the fact that in some states this is a test and slaughter type disease, or at least a test and quarantine type of a situation. And I am under the impression now, and I don't know this directly because I've not talked to people from these two couple of states, departments of agriculture, but these two states were Texas and North Carolina. And I was recently told that there was an issue with an LTE outbreak in a flock in North Carolina, and that the state veterinarian had offered vaccination with a tissue culture, which is the milder, much milder of the two vaccines, and quarantine for 30 days, and that's a first because they normally don't do that. Texas, I understand a year or so ago, eased up on theirs. I think now they quarantine you and for 30 days or so, and then you're able to move the birds around. I don't know the Texas one to be set in stone, but it is something to think about. If you were to encounter this particular disease problem, you know, it would be wise to start some quarantine stuff on your own farm. But it's very, very difficult. Back in the 70s, there was an outbreak in Germany, and they thought they had it under control, and there was one outbreak after another, and they had pulled all their service people off the road. Nobody was going in and out of the farms, and they were still having outbreaks, and they narrowed it down to the fact that the feed trucks were going from one farm to another, and there was no disinfection in between. Once they took that biosecurity measure and washed down the feed trucks and everything from from one farm to another, they were able to gain the upper hand and gain control. So it is something that you need to be aware of, something that we have talked about on this show before. It's nothing new. It's been around for a very long time, and as have the vaccines as a potential remedy and a methodology to protect birds from the disease. The biggest problem with the chick embryo vaccine is that it spreads very readily bird to bird and makes the birds really carriers from that standpoint. The tissue culture vaccine has been around for many, many years. It is a very mild vaccine, does not spread bird to bird, and according to the manufacturer, does not make the birds carriers. So there aren't many options for this particular disease, and you know, the birds can start out with just a what people might call a cold. And I'm here to tell you that there's no such thing in chickens as a cold. It's caused by something. It's either bacterial or it's fungal or a virus or something. But it's not like humans who get a common cold. They just don't have that. So you would see birds maybe in the beginning that just look unthrifty, and before they even start to show you a snotty nose or a swollen eyes, weepy eyes, watery eyes. They get that glazed look in their eyes. It's almost like you poked yourself in the eye with your finger. That's what their eye starts to look like and starts to water. If it starts to itch, your bird will, it might be dirty around the eye a little bit from the bird picking its foot up and scratching it. All of these things need to be looked at and an evaluation made. Some birds may have to be euthanized almost immediately, too far gone to bother to make any attempt to try to save them. Mortality can run all over the place, anywhere from 10 to 20% in the more mild form, okay, where a bird has taken the virus in through the nostril or the eye, versus the what we would call the epidemic type. Epidemic form, which would be directly into the trachea, you could be looking at 70% mortality there. Could go even higher. Depends on how quickly you catch it and whether or not you're able to stop it by coming back in then and vaccinating. The only way to stop it is just like you would treat viruses basically in humans, is supportive therapy. Birds are not going to want to eat, and they'll barely want to drink. And the quicker you can get them drinking and keep them hydrated and getting them back on feed is going to be an advantage to you. However, method, there's no tried and true method for getting them back on feed other than stopping the spread of the virus and euthanizing the birds that are really bad off, that are just not going to recover. And then, as a general rule, we vaccinate everybody, even birds showing the symptoms. You start at one end, work to the other end, get them all done, and then just see where the mortality goes from there. You still may continue to lose some for a few days, but as the vaccine starts to take hold, you'll start to see that the mortality will stop. The symptoms that we see, the conjunctivitis, the snicking, the coughing, choking, sneezing, head slinging, all of those things will start to cease slowly but surely. And vaccination is the only methodology other than putting an entire flock down, which most people are not willing to do and is totally unnecessary for this particular disease. A form of wet pox could start to give you some of these symptoms as well in the beginning, so you'd have to watch out for that. But that you would know right off the bat, though, as soon as the pox lesions really start to develop, you'll be able to make that differentiation between those two. The birds that recover from a natural outbreak will remain carriers for a period of time after the infection has gone away. And generally that's considered about 30 days or so. There is evidence to show that the virus, like it does in humans, not this particular virus, but other viruses like the chickenpox virus in humans, settle down in the nerve ganglia, which are the bundles of nerves in the body. And there is always the possibility that these viruses can then come back up and rear their ugly head and cause further problems. So it's always one of those deals with this particular situation with this virus. Like I said before, very prolific, spreads very easily, very quickly. And if the birds are in egg production, you will see egg production more than likely come to a screeching halt. And so all of those parameters, the rattling, the coughing, there may be even a persistent nasal discharge, persistent meaning nonstop. And the problem with that, again, is you go back, you start looking, CRD can cause the snotty nose, coryza can cause it, infectious bronchitis can cause it. You may see some of it with some pox momentarily as that virus takes hold of the bird. So there's a whole lot of things to think about. But generally, at the end of the day, you know, you should be able to decide for yourself, or you know, take the birds to the laboratory for a definitive diagnosis. Sometimes you don't even have to take the birds; you can do a swab of the trachea or the mouth, and bring that swab to the laboratory. You have to get a particular swab and a container from the laboratory in order to do that. And the test that they'll run is called a PCR test. It's a polymerase chain reaction test, and that's basically what that test does is it looks for the DNA fingerprint of the virus. And the amount of the way to read that test, a lot of people get these things back and will send me the stuff because they don't understand it, even though it may be positive for in this case, LT or laryngotracheitis, you would want to look at the cycle count. Okay, in other words, how many cycles did this PCR unit have to make before it actually found enough of the virus to read? And the generally speaking, the higher the number, the less virus it was really. In other words, had to really work hard to find it. The lower the number means it was right there, very easy to find and in larger quantities. So that's part of that particular type of test. Again, most people would end up taking these birds to the laboratory. The vaccine's readily available. Just came off back order. It's been on back order for 3 or 4 weeks, but it is in stock here, and has a very long expiration date on it. Even I've had people in the past who would buy the vaccine, hold on to it in case there was a problem in their area. The vaccine that we just received here last week expires in 2017. This particular virus, it's called ILT-Vax. It's made by Innovet Shearing Plough, and it is a 1,000-dose bottle, and it requires a booster dose about 4 to 6 weeks after the first initial dose. The recommended timing on it is to vaccinate birds 6 weeks of age and older. And the vaccine runs about $25 a bottle. And you'll know when you go shopping for vaccines, you'll know the difference between a chick embryo without even reading the description, because you can't buy this vaccine for anywhere close to the small amount of money that the chick embryo vaccine cost. The chick embryo vaccines typically run anywhere from $3 to $4 per bottle, and they're generally marketed. Yeah, they're generally marketed for about 10. So when you when you're shopping and you look and you see a vaccine that says it's $10, unless they're willing to give it to you at that price as a if they're trying to tell you that it is the ILT vaccine, there's only a couple of things that can be going on. One, it's either short dated and they're trying to dump it, or they're deliberately marketing it below their cost because you can't buy it for $10 either. So, that's the that's basically the story on that. I also get a lot of questions from people. Will this hurt my hatch? No, it won't. You could take a flock who has been vaccinated, number one, or if, number two, a flock that has undergone a natural outbreak, and neither one would pass it on. The vaccine will not pass on, and the if they were the eggs came from a flock that was undergoing an actual outbreak, and those particular embryos were infected, they just die in the shell. They'd never make it out. So it's not going to be passed on through the egg. And that's a good thing. We don't need to perpetuate this thing out there. But the thing to remember is the chick embryo is the one that you want to stay away from, and that does create a carrier state, and in many cases is responsible for the spread of this disease, not necessarily an actual field outbreak. Many cases of the LT that have been out there and diagnosed have come from this chick embryo vaccine being used by somebody who wasn't informed properly, of what they should have used. And in some cases, the states have been remiss in this as well. My own state here, they don't tell you that they want you to use the chick the tissue culture. They just leave it up to you. And North Carolina, you can't vaccinate with any vaccine for LT unless you get the permission of the state veterinarian. And there may be other states like that, but I know North Carolina's like that. Almost everything North Carolina does want you to vaccinate for unless you have the okay. Mycoplasma is the same one. And the reason they do it there on the mycoplasma end of it is that they're trying to protect the turkey industry. Turkeys are extremely sensitive to mycoplasma, and they don't want an outbreak of mycoplasma in their birds. And they wouldn't even let you use an inactivated vaccine either. So you have to have the permission of the state veterinarian there in order to use that particular vaccine. And this is worth talking about. We talk about a lot of different diseases multiple times through the course of a year as it becomes prudent to do so. I felt that it was with this particular one. I wouldn't call it an active outbreak, but I know there is a case in North Carolina in a backyard flock, and that's being handled by the state vet there, and I think very prudently by them, too, if they're allowing this person to keep the birds and vaccinate. That's a first from what I've seen from that state in the past, so that's a good step forward. There are some state vets that I've talked to that believe that this forever quarantine thing is ridiculous. You know, because it's going to force people to go outside the box and do things. You know, if you had a flock of birds that was LT positive and you worked your way through it and they said, okay, you're quarantined and you can never sell any birds, it's going to be a while before, you know, you might hold that line for a while, but there'll come a day when you will move some of those birds. And so some of the new thinking is that, you know, to go in, quarantine, possibly vaccinate, and, you know, put all the sick birds down and keep the survivors and go on with it after you've been quarantined for 30 days or so. So maybe there is some light at the end of the tunnel, you know, on that type of an approach. Personally, myself, I think that if the government and the commercial poultry industry is so worried about the backyard small flock holder, that they should contribute heavily to a fund that allows backyard folks to take birds and or swabs to the laboratory and have it done free to see where we're at. And I think you'd find much more cooperation from somebody if you were to help guide them and say to them, you know, you probably shouldn't sell birds from this particular flock because they've got mycoplasma and you're just going to spread it around. You know, you might want to consider putting those birds down and maybe, you know, evaluating some birds coming in, or go ahead and test them all and keep the ones that are negative and get rid of everybody else, do a cleanup and hope that we can keep it clean. But they don't do that. I mean, the first thing they usually come, I mean, I deal with it all the time. You know, they tell you, oh, no, you got to put them down. That's old thinking, old thoughts. They still persist around just like bad rumors. And, you know, I'd like to see a change. Here, excuse me, here what they do is you are allowed to, as a small flock holder, they will come in and look at your flock and evaluate it. You can take birds to the laboratory, you can take swabs, and that is free if you have a disease outbreak and whatever. They will not do all your birds free, but they at least do the necropsy free. And I know here they're using the PCR test, and I know they're expensive because there was a time when I was being allowed to bring in stuff from out of state, swabs, and they would run them here in the laboratory, and it was $75 a whack. And they since not allowed that anymore, anything coming in from out of state, even though they're getting paid for it. it's just their decision. Now, they've also made another decision here, too, which I found interesting, and I think it was because the commercial poultry industry was really abusing it, and that is that they now have to pay for their necropsies and their blood work. So that's a first. I almost fell out of my chair when I was told that. We're in a big poultry area here. I mean, it's, you know, there's at any given day here, there's over 6 million birds and chicken houses, you know, and then some. So, I mean, they're not going to do them all, but, you know, they do a lot of testing, and because they're always monkeying around with different vaccines for, you know, Newcastle, bronchitis, and a whole bit, and they, you know, they need to find out what's going on in the flock so they can make a decision of what they're going to do with it. But, so this is basically the whole thing in a nutshell. It's not a very complicated disease, but it is a devastating disease. To be totally honest with you, from my perspective, I would rather have somebody tell me my flock was MG positive rather than tell me they had a outbreak of LT. I know how to clean the other one up. This one here is a real tough one. And, you know, vaccination can be hard on the birds, the whole thing. These recombinant vaccines, these vector immune vaccines, jury's still out on them. I've read pros and cons both ways, and these are genetically engineered viruses where they've taken an extremely, and I say extremely, mild fowlpox virus, and then they've taken a portion of the LT virus and inserted that into the fowlpox vaccine. The portion of the LT that they've taken out of the LT virus, in and of itself, on its own, is not capable of causing disease. But it's also, in and of itself, on its own, not capable of producing sufficient antibodies. So they've taken this piece of this virus, and that's why they call it recombinant, and put it into this mild fowl pox and allow you to then to vaccinate each bird through the wing web stab method for fowl pox and an LT at the same time. Now, the object here is not necessarily to protect the bird from fowl pox as much as it is to use the fowl pox stimulating the bird's immune system to pull the LT along. So that's where they get the antibodies circulating through the fowl pox, alerting the immune system, and the immune system coming out and sampling that virus, which now contains part of the LT virus that is not going to replicate itself. So there's no reaction in the bird, and the bird is not shedding that virus, but the longevity of it and whether or not you're able to come back in later and give a booster, because the fowl pox is being used as that vector to boost that LT, as to whether that will negate the fowl pox the second time around, if I'm making any sense to you. So let's go back and look at it. I do the fowl pox LT today, and you get a nice response, and you get a protected bird. As that virus goes on and the immune system keeps building antibodies, there's going to come a period of time where unless the immune system is constantly seeing that virus, it's going to start to slow down building antibodies, less and less and less, winding down that immune system. The question is, can the fowl pox be wound down enough so that the mild fowl pox that you would give this as a second dose will take hold? That's the question. And there are two trains of thought right at the moment on it, and I've not seen one saying 100% either way. So it's still out there. I have helped a client use the they also make this in a Vectimmune fowl pox MG vaccine, where the MG part cannot reproduce itself and infect the birds and spread it. And it works the same way. It's a fowl pox derived product. And I have helped a client clean up a flock of both the LT and the mycoplasma by doing so, but very costly, and even went into an egg dipping program for quite some time. And when you go into an egg dipping program to eliminate the mycoplasma, you go into a problem then of having lowered hatches, because those that are weak are going to die off from just the egg dipping process in and of itself. So, and it's costly, because the best product to use is gentamicin, liquid, an injectable sterile product, and it's very expensive. So it's a little bit of a can of worms, but it is out there, and there was quite a bit of discussion a few weeks back on one of the boards about it, and I thought it would be good timing, seeing as how there is a case down in the Carolinas as well. And I'm sure there are other cases all over that we just don't hear about. But it is a problem, and being armed with the information that you need to make the right decisions can save you a lot of heartache and a lot of grief. So.
Yep. No, very, really, really interesting information. I know that we can tell our listeners we're going to talk a little bit about the possibility of sex in chicks and the temperature of the incubator and things like that, and we kind of chose not for that, but this is that was really very, very interesting, and I'm going to go to commercial break, and I'm going to see if there's any questions okay. both for live listeners or for in the chat room about today's topic, and we will do that. There'll be more with Peter Brown, Ask the Chicken Doctor, right after this short break. Stay with us.
You've just entered a dimension of dirty water, a dimension of poop-filled water, a dimension of stagnant water. You've crossed into the dirty waterer zone. But up ahead is your signpost to cleaner water, the Brightap Chicken Waterer. The Brightap Waterer is fully covered. Chickens drink from special valves, so dirt and droppings can't get into the water. Chickens get sparkling clean water. You get less work. No poop-filled water pans for you to touch or wash out. Brightap, clean water made simple. Visit chickenwaterer.com to learn more. That's chickenwaterer.com.
Cackle Hatchery is a third-generation, family-owned and operated hatchery.
They offer over 193 varieties of poultry shipped directly from their facility in Missouri. It's their mission to enhance your life by providing you with quality poultry for showing, meat, enjoyment, eggs, and pets. They specialize in hatching purebred poultry and shipping day-old chicks right to your local post office since 1936. 4-H and FFA Youth Poultry Clubs get a 10% discount. Check out their website, cacklehatchery.com, for posted weekly specials and discounts. That's cacklehatchery.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensey.com. Brensey spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensey.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, technology you can trust. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. I want to remind everybody that tomorrow there will be no live podcast because there will be a live webinar going on, and me and Jen were talking about on the way up here. She was like, do you have your self-contained breathing apparatus? Check. Do you have your complete isolation kit? Check. Do you have your head over to CDC headquarters? I'll be like, I'll just be feet away from the Ebola people. Anyway, which Emory University is right next door to the CDC. But this is my second trip down there to CDC headquarters this year, and I must say it is a fascinating place and just very interesting. So I'll be heading down there again tomorrow. Webinar's at 2. I need to be there at 1. They inspect the car for bombs and all that kind of stuff, so allow time for security and then my truck is too big to park in the parking deck, so I have to go over and park outside of their employee daycare center, and then walk down the walkway into the visitor center, where I'll check in again and get a pass, and then meet the folks that are doing the webinar with me. So that'll be tomorrow. So hopefully you can tune in again after the show today. I'll be posting that link again on our Facebook page, where you can register for free. And it should be worth your time. If you've had chickens for a long time, it may be a good review, but if you're new to chicken keeping, then I guarantee you it'll be very interesting, and there'll be some good information for you, so no worries there. Let me see if there's any, if you're out there listening live and have any questions for Peter, 347-637-3237. Again, that's 347-637-3237, and if you're in the chat room and have any questions for Peter about today's topic, we got a few minutes, we can ask that. If not, there's no worries, because we will return later this week. Now, again, as you know, just like with the last tour, I haven't looked at or correlated the times when we're going to be on the road, when we have an event. If we're going to have internet capabilities, whether it be wireless or wired at the campground, on the road, or any of that. So at least for the next 30 days, I don't want to say it'll be hit or miss, because I'm hoping we'll be able to do more hit than miss, but I will keep everybody informed via Facebook about the live broadcasts, and if, where, when, how, and maybe not, or not at all, and why, and that type of thing. But if you happen to tune in and there's just nothing and nobody and nothing's going on, and you can't find anything, then we're either on the road or we're not on the road, but we have no internet connectivity, no how, no way, no nothing, whether it be the campground or via wireless or satellite or any of that kind of stuff, because we have several backups. But we'll just have to see. So just be prepared for that over the next 30 days while we are on the road. And hopefully I'll be able to post several pictures along the way, and so you can enjoy the tour with us, even if we may not be coming to your area. So I have to love it. Christmas Chick wants to know, Peter, if you have already thought about it, what you'll be talking about next week. So let me get back over here. Yep, you are live, Peter. And if we don't know, then we'll definitely post it on our Facebook page.
I definitely want to get to the point where we do the topic we've been talking about on and off here a little bit, about the sex ratio of males to females, possible manipulation of that, you know, what's the driving forces behind it, and so on. And the only problem I have with it at this point, and I discussed it with you, Andy, is the it is a complicated subject. And I am in the process of coming up with a methodology to present it so that everybody can get a better grasp of what it is. I'm no geneticist. I've said that on the show many times. If anybody goes back and listens to all the stuff, we talk about genetics. So for me, it's like chewing dried oatmeal. And so I looked at my notes that I have on hand, and deemed that it was not material that was going to be in any way, shape, or form presentable. And I don't mind saying it. You know, it's a you know, I look at it and I do understand it. That's not the issue that I'm trying to say here. It just can be difficult to try to get the point across. So I'm going to make for myself, in an effort to present it in a different way, I'm going to make a little graph, so to speak, and use a couple of symbols and stuff. And I'll have to do a little bit of explaining about different things so that you can get the gist of what I'm saying, and then apply that definition of something. That's the hard part about genetics. Even when I went to college and took two college-level courses in poultry genetics, it was a matter of taking the book, reading the chapter, going through and saying, oh, there's a word I have no clue, and there's another one I have no clue, and making my list of no-clue words, and then going and looking up and finding out what they were, and then come back and read the chapter and go, oh, yeah, that's what they're talking about. It's kind of like that same thing. So, you know,
Let me ask you this, Doc. I was thinking about this when you had first started talking about this, and okay. and I think it's going to be a fascinating topic and a fascinating subject, and get a lot of interest and a lot of listens and whatnot, make people go, and may even have people start implementing or trying to get a grasp better about it, especially those that are interested in hatching their own. But at the end of the day, what my mind tells me is this, trying to be logical about it. If it was even remotely
possible, knowing how much money, time, and effort bigwigs like Ideal Poultry, McMurray Hatchery, Tackle Hatchery, you know, places like that, you know, Ideal hatching out 6 million chicks a year, or shipping 6 million, which means they probably hatch out close to 12 million, being half the roosters that you know most people don't want. So if it was even remotely possible, again, I think it's going to be a fascinating, interesting subject. I don't even know the outcome yet or what it's going to be, how you're going to deliver that. But if it was, wouldn't you think those folks would be doing it if it was even remotely possible to save money, time, effort, I mean, lives of male chicks, things like that? And that's my common sense factor when I heard that first off, thinking about it and factoring it in my brain. I'm like, well, the bottom line at the end of the day, at the end of the show, that would probably be my wrap-up. If this was so, or if it was even remotely possible, they would probably be doing it.
Yeah, and, what brought this whole thing around, and one of the reasons why I wanted to touch on this particular subject is that there is a school of thought amongst some people, that this is the case. I had a client contact me. He's a pretty reliable individual, so educated person. Not that that matters a whole lot, but I mean, what I mean by that, he keeps good records, okay? And he said that in his hatching this year, he's gotten about 70% males, and that's what kicked this whole football off. So we had a huge discussion about it, and I said, well, I remember this, I remember that, and I said, I had a great discussion with him, and I thought, well, this would be great to sit down and write my thoughts down and, share it with everybody, and if the tips fall where they may, I'll tell you what the truth is at the end of the day, but also tell you what things are being worked on to make things possibly down the road work in different fashions. I mean, I was listening to Dr. Ben Carson talk the other day, a lot of people probably don't want to listen to this kind of stuff, but I do. That's what I do. And I was listening to him talk, and he's a brilliant man, and he says that everything you ever learned from day one, from birth, whatever it is locked in your brain. He said you may not be able to recall it, but he said if he could take a drill and drill into the side of your head and touch certain areas of your brain with these electrodes, he could make you recall a book that you read 60 years ago, but you have no recollection of it now. Fascinating stuff to me. Maybe not to somebody else, but definitely fascinating to me.
Man, that's amazing. It reminds me of, and this is probably, I want to say it was about 10 years ago, probably not that long ago, may have been about 5 years ago, so I'm going to guess sometime between 5 and 10 years, if it was earlier than that, because we haven't owned a TV in at least several years, so I saw it, I think, on TV, where they did brain surgery on a living and an awake musician while he was playing, I don't know if he was playing the banjo, the guitar, or a violin, or something, and they were trying to repair something in his brain, and he would play notes while, it was fascinating back then, and I'm thinking, great day, but, you think about it, it's a catch-22, you think about all this technology we have, mm-hmm. And then you hear, and then you lose a loved one over something that's like, wait a minute, we have all this technology, and we can't do anything about, I can't even think off the top of my head right now. I'm so tired from the last 3 days of getting ready for this trip. But it's just like, wait a minute, we can do this, but we can't do that. And so, or this person died from that, but yet we can have open heart transplant, and the guy's playing golf a week later. What's going on here? So it is absolutely fascinating.
Well, I watched another program. I didn't get to see all of it. It'll probably come back on again. But I watched the thing, and they were talking about your brain and why a lot of the things that you may see are not accurate. You think you saw, but you didn't. And he said, this fellow, he said, it's because your brain is lazy. And not just that individual, everybody. And they took this, they took a survey of people on the street that they didn't know, weren't part of the thing other than walking down the street, and they had two pictures side by side. And one was Bill Clinton, and the other one, okay, they just changed the hair on the... And as soon as you looked at it, and I fell for it too, just like everybody else, I said, Bill Clinton, Al Gore. And then I looked at the lips, and I said, well, maybe a little bit of Donald Trump, okay? And all it was, and there were people that were there, I mean, young people, older people, didn't matter, came by, and there were only a couple of people that actually, right off the bat, after looking at it, you know, intensely, were able to make the distinction between the two, that they were one and the same. All they did was change the hair. It was two pictures of Clinton, one with Al Gore-type hair, and one with Clinton himself. So the brain is lazy, because as soon as you looked at it, you said, not the same. I know that. So it's your first thing that came to your lazy brain. Your brain didn't do any thinking. Very interesting.
That reminds me of? It reminds me of the many of days over the last decade spending time in Jen's classroom at the kindergarten level learning the sight words. You know, you're not learning to read right away. You're learning sight words. And she had a whole wall listed of, I forget how many sight words, like is, and I mean, just, you're not reading them. You just basically memorize them. You know them. They're called sight words. And so it's very interesting. That's the first thing that came into my mind, teaching kindergartners how to read. And,
that's probably why, you know, eyewitnesses are not always accurate. And they will tell you that.
Yep.
You know, they will tell you. Just because they have an eyewitness doesn't mean that what they saw and what they say is actually what took place. I mean, it's helpful, but it's not the end-all, because they're not always accurate. And
just ask any woman. Just ask any woman out there. We men, we have selective hearing to begin with. Now, Peter, you're telling us we have selective sight to go along with the selective hearing. So,
I find this stuff fascinating. Other people probably would, you know, not even listen to it. But I can be mesmerized by that, because I like to know how things work and what the end result's going to be and that kind of stuff. So that's why I do what I do. You know, so it certainly isn't
because... I call it, ladies, cut us some slack, okay? We have already have selective hearing. Now we've got selective of vision, and it's just it's not working. So
I didn't even go there. So I stayed completely away from that one.
Oh, we see. We got fishing trucks, and I'm not going to the next one. But anyway, so it's selective thinking.
But, you know, and the funny part is they can scientifically back it up. That's the thing. And, I mean, it was fascinating to me, and it was interesting to know that, you know, that everything you've ever learned is still in your head. I mean, you may have forgotten it and not able to recall it, but it's still there. And I guess this is looking at the possibility down the road, you know, a whole lot of ways that people might be able to be helped by stimulation of the brain. You know, that people that are incapacitated now and so on. So it was actually quite interesting to me anyway. So
fascinating. It's a great topic today, very timely. And I'm sorry you're getting folks that are ordering all this stuff and are going through this in that area, but we appreciate you coming on and sharing that information with us, even though it may not be something we would see in our flock, but it's great to have the knowledge, and if someone does have it, they can listen to the archive and get more familiar with it, and those that are dealing with it then have a better understanding about it and what they're dealing with. So We appreciate you coming on today, and we look forward to having you come on next week as well, next Monday, and be another episode of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown, and maybe we'll get together that topic for the temperature and the hatching of the eggs and determining the sex and things like that. Maybe we can get that done, if not next week.
If I get it to where I feel comfortable with it, presenting it to everybody, you know, it's I'm looking at doing a line thing and putting the different things on a line, and that takes time, and you know, I don't read, and if I read stuff to you, I'll tell you, but it all comes off the top of my head, and I just didn't think that doing it that way would be beneficial to the listening audience, and I want them to get the maximum out of it. Otherwise, it isn't worth doing, as far as I'm concerned. So,
yeah, that's fine. And maybe the next week, maybe it'll take a couple of weeks. Maybe next week we'll do the Q&A, and I'll have some time to post on there and get some, you know, get about a dozen to a dozen and a half questions, and we can do the Q&A and call-ins and stuff maybe next Monday. So, but I'll talk to you after the or off air later this week to see what we got going on with my schedule. So thanks for coming on today. We do appreciate it, and we'll see you
my
next
pleasure.
Week.
Okay, good travel, Andy.
Thank you so much. That's Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. Hey, visit them online. You're online listening right now. Go to the website right now. Type it in, www.firststatevetsupply.com. If they don't have it, you don't need it. Lots of great stuff. There's some things that are on sale as well. And while you're there, check out that emergency medicine kit to go along with your first aid kit for your chicken. So that's going to wrap up another episode. We thank you very much for tuning in today. And I hope you can tune into the webinar tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I will be posting that link here on my Facebook page after the show. God bless everybody.